Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you.
Today's special guest is Ryan Burns, Director of Communications for Jefferson City Schools. Hello, Ryan.
Hello.
So Ryan and I are doing this podcast remotely, as we've been doing recently. She's at home at this time. I'm here at the News Tribune. So Ryan, let's circle back to the beginning of this whole novel coronavirus saga here. When did the schools switch to remote learning, and how was that decision made to send the students home, the educators home, and have the teaching environment become a remote experience?
Well, I would go back even a little bit further to what I think was probably mid to late February. You know, we as a leadership team started perking our ears up as we were hearing more discussion and seeing more news coverage of the developing coronavirus situation. So we actually started communicating with our families even as early as the first week of March. Mm. We sent out communication just to let them know that we were monitoring the situation. We started touching base with our local health department to just talk about pandemic plans in general and reviewing what some of those procedures might look like for the school district should we get to the point where this situation came closer to home. So fast forward a little bit to the week of March 16th, the president had released social distancing guidelines that indicated that it was no longer in the best interest for large groups of 10 or more to gather, and his recommendation was for school to be done at home. So we felt like although there were indications that schools were exempt from some of the guidelines, that with the information that we were becoming aware of, just the risks associated with continuing to gather and the importance of social distancing and how we as a district with 9,000 students could impact possibly the spread of this virus in our own community by going ahead and sending students home and closing down our buildings. So we announced that to families on Monday, March 16th, and staff that we were going to go ahead and start our remote learning on Wednesday, March 18th. That was a large undertaking for us. This wasn't anything that we've done before. Our staff did an incredible job scrambling quickly to begin to conceptualize what a remote learning environment would look like for JC schools. We sent devices home with every student in grades 2 through 12, the thought process being that some of our pre-K and kindergarten, our youngest students, don't have as much work that they can benefit from doing on a device. So we quickly assigned a device to send home with every student in those grades 2 through 12. We also did an initial survey of our families to gather some information on who has access to internet at home, and also who would need food support through the closure, because we recognize that our schools provide a very important lifeline for some of our families to come to a safe place every day for learning and meals. And we wanted to kind of wrap our arms around what our families would be needing as far as support once we began this closure.
Okay, so how's it been going then? I mean, this is, from I think the public's perception, this is obviously not a natural learning environment of remote learning where you have a teacher who is interacting remotely with students. So how's it been going? Let's talk about educationally wise, as well as then, as you mentioned, the support network there of providing food for those who need that support.
Well, education wise, I think that it has been incredible to watch our teachers think on their feet and get creative and dive into a toolbox that they have not had to use previously. Thankfully, we have seen more of an integration of technology into our learning environments in recent years. So I think that that is a blessing, because many of our teachers and students are used to experiencing education to some extent through technology, through some of our electronic platforms like iReady that we use as a reading tool. And so that certainly has been helpful, but obviously the total game changer is you don't have students physically in a classroom with a teacher talking to them, interacting with them one-on-one, and you lose that, you know, individual sort of personal contact that you have in the classroom and the relationship piece.
Right.
So one thing that obviously it's been a trend across the nation is that we have looked at leaning on some of the platforms for networking. Google Meet is what we have encouraged our teachers to use for students, where they can arrange a virtual classroom, so to speak. They can have students come on. They can have that interaction. They can see the teacher not only can see the students, but the students can see other students. So that is a tool that we have worked on ramping up the access to that platform. And we've also encouraged our teachers to be available for certain time periods every day to respond to emails and questions and phone calls. And we also really took the initiative that first full week after we returned from spring break to have teachers reach out directly to every single student so that our students are getting that personal one-on-one contact. And throughout that process, not only did they talk about the learning environment and what was and wasn't successful, but they were also able to gather feedback on access to internet again and access to food to just make sure, are we meeting the needs of our families and what can we do better? We did launch a meal program on Wednesday, March 18th, where students could come into school buildings and pick up breakfast and lunch. And then we expanded that shortly after our spring break concluded to also include bus stops all across the district where families can go to a bus stop location and pick up meals. And so we're confident through the feedback that we're getting that that effort has been successful and that we're meeting the needs, those that we're aware of, and we're able to adapt and change kind of as we go along.
So for those of us who don't necessarily have children in the school district that are going to classes or enrolled in classes, I should say, give us a picture of what that looks like. I mean, so a typical school that I recall, you'd be there at 8 a.m., you're there either in the same classroom if you're elementary school or you're going between classes for middle and high school. So it's an all-day event. What's it like for the learning environment now? I mean, is it how much of the day is the teacher actually engaged with students? How much of the day does it fall to the parents to basically act as that teacher, if that makes sense?
Well, one thing that's tricky about this whole situation is that every student and family has a different home situation, and it's difficult to set a standard that's going to be able to meet the needs of every family in exactly the same way. But we have worked on trying to provide some basic templates for families, just kind of a bare minimum of expectations or recommendations for how they might go about learning. It doesn't translate the same way as far as the number of hours into the school day, because when you look at a regular length of a school day, you've got all kinds of things between PE classes or alternative non sort of traditional subjects. You might go to a music class or an art class. You all have breaks for lunch or recess. And so a student is not sitting in their seat learning with instruction from a teacher for that entire time period. And that looks much different when they're at home too, engaging just one-on-one with a parent. We've recommended more along the lines of 2 to 3 hours for elementary school students, more for secondary students because, you know, they just have different attention spans and capacity to learn. But we've tried to provide guidance. We've tried to outline some templates that they could just, as a recommendation at the elementary level, you know, try doing reading on Monday and math on Tuesday for this amount of time. And we've broken that up at the secondary level as well to say that, you know, on Monday and Wednesday, focus on hours 1, 3, 5, for example, and two and four on Tuesday and Thursday kind of thing. Because one thing that we have heard back from families is that this entire situation, it's not only new and it's outside of everyone's routine and very different from their comfort zone, but it's also stressful for our families. Because if you're a parent and you're working full time, whether you're an essential employee that's continuing to report to a work location or you're working remotely from home, sometimes in the very same living environment that your student is trying to learn, there's a lot to juggle as a parent and as a student. So we're trying to be cognizant of that as well, that we don't want to overwhelm the families and push them so far outside of that comfort zone that, you know, the stress becomes greater than the returned value to the schoolwork being done at home.
Right. Well, I can say, recalling my own time as a parent with a student in an elementary or high school level, whatever, that I might have been fine with algebra, but I would have needed some help with science, you know. So what kind of support have you offered parents who are trying to answer those questions that a student might have that would he or she would normally go to a teacher about?
The best thing that we've tried to encourage with our staff is just remaining available for that constant support and communication with students and families as needed, because the best source, obviously, for a question about a subject or a specific assignment is going to be that classroom teacher. And so trying to match up scheduling and make sure that the teachers are available to answer those questions directly has been kind of what we have looked at as one of our number one goals, to just encourage our staff to be open and make sure that they are responsive and in a quick manner, because, you know, that's one of the biggest losses for that personal interaction in the classroom, is the teacher can answer a student's question immediately as they're working on a math assignment. And so trying to look for how do we decrease that lag time if they aren't in a, you know, Google Meet type virtual classroom environment, just encouraging the teachers to stay open to communicate with the students as quickly as possible so that they can answer those questions. If not in real time, then very soon thereafter.
Okay. So what's it going to be looking like for students, you know, as we're getting closer, about a month away from the end of the semester? Are they going to be taking final exams, doing school projects as they would have in the past? And are they going to get letter grades or just pass-fail grades? I mean, how is the district going to assess the performance of students?
Well, obviously, all of the state testing requirements have been waived for the end of the school year. So that takes a lot of the stress and pressure off of our teachers and our students performance-wise to worry about those types of things. We have sort of ended our third quarter, and for the secondary students, that is the grade that we are using for fourth quarter, that students can improve upon that grade up to a certain amount of 10%, but they can't go backwards based on these current circumstances. And just knowing that there are so many controls that we have to factor in if a student doesn't have access to internet or if they don't have a positive learning environment to focus on their studies, then we made that decision that there wouldn't be a penalty assigned to the grades for the fourth quarter for our secondary students, unless a student was already failing a course or had that grade of an F or below. Then we want to give them more room where they can lift that grade up into a passing position. But anyone else will have the opportunity to raise their grade up to 10% for the fourth quarter. And, you know, we went back and forth on that because we hear mixed responses from families. Some of them are begging for more work. They want to continue to challenge their students. Their students are super engaged, and they want to learn as much as they can during this time period, obviously. And others are struggling, or they are, you know, looking for ways to make sure that they don't fall behind. And so we're trying to just strike that balance where we don't create a gap for our students based on the learning environment that we have at home, that they have at home, that's outside of our control as a district.
Okay. So recently the governor announced that the schools wouldn't be reopening their buildings for the rest of the school year. has that announcement changed any approach that JC Schools is pursuing?
Oh, and what a heartbreaker that announcement was, wasn't it? Because I think all of us, while there was a, you know, reality kind of lurking in the back of our minds that we might not return to school for the rest of the school year, we were hopeful, certainly, that conditions might greatly improve. And we were set to return on Monday, May 4th, at the time of the governor's announcement last week. So obviously, with him closing schools through the remainder of the school year, our last day of school is scheduled for May 28th. So that pushes that back by about 4 weeks, where we would have been closed through. And I would say the biggest change for that was from the responses that we heard from our staff and our families immediately was the emotion and the disappointment to know that they wouldn't be coming back with their same class of students or to their same classroom teacher. They wouldn't have that end of year experience that so many have, particularly for our seniors and our upperclassmen at the secondary level. And that has changed for us, our approach a little bit, because initially we were looking at the closure 1 week or 2 weeks at a time, and how do we prepare materials for the upcoming week or the upcoming 2 weeks. And now we're looking at a much longer length of time. And we're looking to kind of dial in to see the delivery methods that we've provided. Are they working? What needs to be changed when we are looking at a longer term? And so we did send out an additional round of surveys to all of our families to try to get feedback on how is the alternative learning going? Are you still finding that you have access to meals? Do you have the internet access that you need so that we can take that feedback and adapt looking forward for the next month and a half while we provide that curriculum and learning through May 28th?
Okay. Yeah, it was heartbreaking for many people in the district. I mean, when you think of the idea that in one small area, extracurricular activities, which I guess is really not a small area because it's defining for many students their high school career, you know, as one example. So when you think of things like theater, concerts, sporting events, speech and debate, all those things came to an end with that decision. Is the district able to do anything to recapture any of those experiences for the students?
I think that falls a lot onto the creativity and ingenuity of those activity sponsors and coaches. You know, all of us are still living under the reality of the Cole County and State of Missouri stay-at-home order. And so there are so many limitations to what we can do as a community right now. We have seen activity sponsors. I know coaches have sort of instigated online workouts or creative ways for students to continue to get active throughout the closure. We have seen, you know, our choir directors at Jefferson City High School went around and put signs in the yards of the seniors that, you know, would have been in the vocal music program. I've seen coaches going out and delivering goodie bags to their students to just encourage them to keep their heads up and try to stay positive through this process. So there aren't really ways that we can officially replace those experiences, particularly under the current circumstances, because our teams can't go out and really practice and work out together in groups with the social distancing guidelines. So the best, I think, that we've seen everyone attempting to do is keep the spirits lifted, try to honor the experiences that the students would have had by just recognizing them as athletes and looking ahead at next year, their next season, maybe their next college experience, and just trying to stay together collectively as a group and stay positive while we wait and see what the future of the next several weeks holds.
Okay. So for seniors, the decision to end on-campus activities probably threw a bit more of some kinks into their longstanding traditions for that senior class. So let's talk about a couple of them. First, prom. Ryan, did you have a prom?
I think I did have a prom, yes. That was several decades ago.
Yeah. Fair enough. I did not. So my kids certainly did. But obviously, for many folks, prom is a defining moment in your senior, junior, senior year. So, is the district going to be able to do anything to help give these seniors some sort of a prom?
Well, what we have done is gathered information from our senior parents and our senior families to try to gauge kind of where they're at with not only prom, but also the baccalaureate ceremony that's held typically ahead of graduation and then the graduation ceremony itself. And interestingly enough, prom and graduation have sort of shown themselves to be the most two important events out of those three. And what we've heard from our families and our students is that they do want to still have some kind of a prom or a graduation ceremony. If not possible during the month of May, the next popular sort of selection after that was to look at rescheduling these events in July, if possible. They were more in favor of doing a live in-person event at a later date versus exploring the option of a remote event of some kind. I'm not really sure how you would go about having a remote prom. It's easier to imagine having a remote graduation ceremony.
Right.
But something to give them the sense of having that real life experience as a senior with their friends and their fellow classmates. And so the other piece of that was that we asked our families, you know, how much advance notice do you need for an event like this? We were under the assumption in the beginning that, you know, families would want to have information to plan weeks and months in advance. And so if we can't make a decision today about an event or a date in the summer, that wouldn't give them enough advance time to plan. But what we actually heard back from them was that the majority of them said they don't need much more than 2 to 3 weeks to kind of prepare and plan. And so what that tells us is that it's actually in the best interest to wait a little while longer and see. Graduation was scheduled for May 17th. So if we can give ourselves a little bit of time, because as we all know, this situation changes daily. And it's hard to say by the time this podcast even goes out to your listeners where we'll be at in that exact moment. But trying to buy ourselves a little bit of time and wait until we get closer to early May to look and see if we have any kind of an idea at that time where we might be able to look at rescheduling those events and give those seniors the opportunity to have the in-person experience of a graduation or a prom later in the summer, if at all possible.
Yeah, that had to be a very uplifting feeling there, that the families recognize the unusual circumstances that, and they're willing and able to give you the flexibility to get closer to the date so that these students can be honored in the way that they should be honored.
Right. And the last thing we want to do is make a plan, push graduation back a certain number of weeks, and then as we get closer to that time, push it again and again. And so, you know, we have with some events canceled them because we know that the closer we get towards the end of the school year, and especially now with schools being closed, that there just won't be an opportunity to have those events again. But for something as important as prom and graduation, to know that we can wait a little bit and see what the environment looks like as we get closer to that time, I think will be hugely beneficial, most importantly to our students and our parents, so that they can have the type of experience that they deserve in this moment.
Absolutely. So looking ahead, the next big hurdle from my perspective is going to be summer school. At this time, what are JC School's summer school plans?
Well, our summer school is scheduled to begin on June 1st. And run through June 25th as a traditional in-classroom learning experience. Obviously, there are so many things that are up in the air to truly know whether or not that is a possibility to continue hitting that time frame of in-person learning. With schools ending on May 28th, we obviously have very little time between then and when summer school is scheduled to start to really plan and get things up and running. But we are exploring other options so that we know that there will be multiple scenarios that we can present as a leadership team for discussion in the next few weeks, one of which would be providing an alternative learning, a virtual learning opportunity for summer school, or possibly looking at pushing summer school back to a later date in July for the traditional in-classroom learning environment. And I think whereas something like graduation or prom, we have more time and flexibility to wait and schedule an event that is, you know, several hours long later in the summer as needed. With summer school, that is a much larger undertaking. There are so many things that go into it, from enrollment to planning the bus routes, obviously from a staffing perspective. We have teachers hired for summer school, but how do those things change? And will we be able to, if we can't get a solid, firm answer within the next couple weeks, be ready to launch summer school on June 1st? So our leadership team is preparing for all options right now. We are discussing, we're looking at what other districts around the state are doing as far as virtual summer school. We are also collecting feedback from our families to see whether, you know, are you planning right now to send your student to summer school if it does start on June 1st? Would you still send your student to summer school if it was provided virtually? Would you still send your student if it was in-person traditional classroom learning in the month of July instead of the month of June? And we're looking for that same feedback from our staff that was scheduled to work summer school to see whether they are able to feel like they're still interested in teaching summer school if it falls under one of the other two scenarios. So it is very fluid in this moment and up in the air to some extent, but I do expect that we will have to force ourselves to make a decision about that relatively quickly in the next several weeks.
Okay. So getting your crystal ball out, Ryan, looking even farther.
Oh,
yeah.
I have one of those.
Dust that thing off there, exactly. Looking even farther ahead, what sort of discussions are going on about the prospects of what school is going to look like in the fall?
Oh, I think that everyone is kind of in the same boat right now, looking ahead, scratching our heads and wondering what is the fall of 2020 going to hold? And there are so many unanswered questions that make it difficult to know where we will be at that time. I think it's something that we've all prepared ourselves, again, that there's a possibility that school will look different. But we are hopeful, just like we've heard from national health experts, that we will be able to return to school in the fall. We're hearing, obviously, at the national and state level that there might be hope for social distancing to begin to loosen even in as early as the month of May. And again, going back to that, we just never know what happens tomorrow, let alone next week, let alone by May 1st. I think that we are very hopeful as an educational community that we will be able to return in the fall, but we'll return with a whole lot of learning that has happened in these couple of weeks here within our COVID-19 closure to know that we have options. If there is another return to cases of COVID-19 in the fall that would require us to sort of retreat back into social distancing for a short period of time, then we have some of these systems that we've stood up and we've tested them, and our teachers and our students and our families have a little bit more practice kind of going through this type of experience. And so I think that that will give us a level of confidence that if we do have any issues in the fall, hopefully we don't, or if we do, they'll be for a shorter length of time, that we will have some of these other options that we can fall back on if needed, and it won't be quite as much of a shock to everyone to have to scramble and come up with a plan. We'll have something in place that's been tested that we can use if needed.
All right. Any parting words you'd like to share with our listeners regarding JC Schools?
Just a thanks to everyone who is out there, from the parents that are scrambling to juggle homeschooling at home in a situation that they haven't been in before, and to the teachers who are looking to be creative and certainly exhausting every effort they have to try to reach students and continue to build those relationships, and to our students for remaining committed to the learning experience and committed to coming back in the fall, even smarter than they were when they left us on March 18th. And to the food service workers, our nutrition services team, that have been coming out and coming to buildings and working to provide meals every day, the bus drivers who have been participating, just to make sure that our families and our students have their basic needs met. It has been just an incredible undertaking to watch everyone go outside of their comfort zones and figure out a way to make this work. And we've heard so many positive messages from families and students and parents that are appreciative. These are difficult circumstances for everyone, but they understand that we're doing the best that we can as a district, and I think that we're going to get through this. So just thank you to everyone for continuing to be patient and continuing to be committed to education, even under these difficult circumstances.
All right. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to share some of the ways that we're trying to cover the community's response to the COVID-19 threat. On our website, we've created some general announcement pages where cancellations and announcements from businesses and government are being listed. We're updating the site regularly through the day with information, both locally and regionally, as it comes into us. If you have a print subscription, I'd encourage you to activate your digital subscription so that you can stay up to date as we update our news report throughout the day. From a coverage standpoint, we've pulled all of our coronavirus stories from behind our paywall. We see that as a public service so that you can be engaged and make informed decisions for yourself and for your family. At times like this, information is vital to the public safety. To that end, our mission is to provide that information to you. For us, it's a 365-day mission. I'd encourage you to consider subscribing to the News Tribune to help us fulfill that mission. You're not only investing in your community newspaper, but in your community itself. As always, we do welcome your story ideas or questions. You can send them to news@newstribune.com. Be safe, be informed, and wash your hands.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.